I think the big thing about focused ultrasound is that it certainly has proven to be safe. It's safe and it seems to be so focused in a precise way. The treatment that can lead to disruption of cells, it can lead to cell killing, and I think it has the potential, especially because of the safety profile, to be able to be combined with immunotherapies.
Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston Smith. Today's episode focuses on cancer immunotherapy in a conversation with Dr. Jill O'Donnell-Tormey and Dr. Jessica Foley of the Foundation. Dr. Jill O'Donnell-Tormey is the Chief Executive Officer and Director of Scientific Affairs at the Cancer Research Institute, a global nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the most promising areas of cancer immunotherapy research. During her tenure, she has spearheaded the creation of catalytic and novel research programs that span the laboratory and the clinic. She's guided over $500 million in funding to these programs, which enable research and scientific discovery that is changing the course of cancer treatment and saving more lives today. Dr. O'Donnell-Tormey serves on the Cancer Immunotherapy Advisory Board of the Focus Ultrasound Foundation and the Editorial Advisory Board of Immuno-Oncology Insights. In 1998, Dr. O'Donnell-Tormey was named one of Irish America Magazine's Top 100 Irish Americans. She's a recipient of the 2002 Fairleigh Dickinson University Pinnacle Award, the highest honor bestowed on its alumni, the 2013 CRI Frederick W. Ault Award for New Discoveries in Immunology, and the 2020 Tara Withington Public Service Award from the Society for Immunotherapy of Cancer. Dr. O'Donnell-Tormey received a Bachelor's of Science in Chemistry from Fairleigh Dickinson University and a PhD in Cell Biology from the SUNY Downstate Medical Center. Here's Dr. O'Donnell-Tormey in conversation with Dr. Jessica Foley of the Foundation.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Jill. Pleasure to have you here.
Thanks very much, Jessica. It's great to be here and have a conversation with you.
Yes. We're happy that you're here. What drew you to a career in science? And was there anything that was, particularly interested you about cancer research?
Well, I think, the science question is always a weird one. I don't have any medical people in my family, and I was always the type, I was the little girl that at Christmas I wanted the chemistry set and I wanted the microscope, and I'd have friends come over and, we would have go down to the basement and do experiments. So where that came from, I don't know, but I tell this story. It's a very funny story that I went to an all-girls Catholic school, and I remember being in first grade, and my teacher, Mother St. Anne Patrice, lined us up and said, "Girls, okay, we're going to the laboratory." And I remember I can amazingly remember being so excited. Oh my gosh, we're going to go get to see a laboratory. And I was extremely disappointed when we ended up in the bathroom. But where that excitement at 6 years old to be in a laboratory, I don't know where that came. It's somewhat innate. And then, as I always was into, I was originally a chemistry major and I thought I'd stay chemistry. And then my mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And so the thought of disease chemistry mechanisms, then I was thinking biochemistry. And then I went to do my PhD in cell biology, which I thought was, which was a new discipline at the time that I started, but it was, you can relate it to cancer. I worked with cancer cells in the lab, like models, cell lines, but answering the cancer question and understanding how you could help, treatments that could eventually help people. I think it probably came from my mother. And then, it just happened. You go from one lab, and then I got into another lab that was working in reactive oxygen intermediates at Rockefeller University. And that was, those are released by cells of the immune system, and tried to understand how there was protective mechanisms against it. And, it just evolves. And then, of course, I landed at CRI, never thinking I'd ever leave the lab. But life happens there. I had two little girls at the time and feeling, could I be competitive? Could I still stay in academia and have the career I wanted? And CRI had funded me as a postdoctoral fellow. when I was at Rockefeller, and I saw in the back of Science magazine, they were looking for someone with a science background to become their director of public information. So I said, oh, you know, maybe. And this again, I thought I wanted to be like an on-air science reporter. And of course, I had no English background at all or any communication background. I said, oh, public information. This sounds like communication. Maybe I'll do this for a few years. It'll be a springboard into television. Well, you know, 3 years came and went, and I've never left. And I've been at CRI now almost, yeah, over 37 years.
So starting out, for those who are unfamiliar, can you explain what is cancer immunotherapy?
Sure. So cancer immunotherapy is a big word that encompasses a lot of things. But in its basic terms, it's using treatments that actually capitalize on the natural ability of your immune system to recognize threats and eliminate them. I think most people today, when you think about immunotherapy, many people think it's just checkpoint blockades, which is one type of immunotherapy. And that's the type of immunotherapy that we know about taking the brakes off the immune system. So again, little kind of understanding here that your immune system, whenever you get an infection or a viral, you know, a bacterial infection, you mount an immune response to get rid of this foreign entity in your body. But your body has natural kind of controls to make sure as soon as that activation of the immune system happens, there's a checks and balances. So there's a way that starts shutting that immune system off so that once the threat is gone, the immune system shuts off and doesn't keep going on and on to lead to autoimmunity or lead to inflammation all over your body. So what the checkpoint blockades, which were FDA approved, you know, first for melanoma and then for non-small cell lung cancer, and now for more than 28 different types of cancer, is an immunotherapy that takes the brakes off the immune system. Because what has happened is the cancer cells have actually co-opted the natural process in your body that shuts off the immune system to basically make themselves visible to the immune system. So the tumor is causing immunosuppression, shutting the immune response off. These checkpoint blockades are antibodies that block that mechanism. And so therefore, when you give this immunotherapy, a checkpoint blockade, it allows the immune system to keep going, which is what we've learned is necessary when it comes to cancer, unlike a bacterial or viral infection, where your body usually, in most cases, handles that quite well. But in cancer, because that has a natural defense against the immune system, you have to shut that down so that the immune system can keep going. So that's what I think when most people talk about immunotherapy these days, that's what they think of. I think it's the most dramatic discovery that happened over the last almost 15 years now that changed the face of cancer treatment. Prior to that, many people did not believe you could ever use your immune system to treat cancer, but this proved you could, and certainly has changed treatment for many, many different types of cancers and for patients, and actually leads in many cases to long-term remissions, but only a subset of patients. This isn't 100% of patients are benefiting from that. Another type of immunotherapy that is also FDA approved is CAR T cells. This is a cellular form of treatment. What this means is you take a white blood cell out of your body, a T cell. These are the main effector cells in your body. These are the cells that actually kill cancer. You take them out of a given patient. They get genetically altered in the laboratory so that they can recognize a specific marker on a cancer cell. You grow them up in the lab, and when you infuse them back into the patient, they target to that specific marker on that specific cancer. So it's bringing those T cells, those killer T cells, to the tumor site. And this, of course, has shown dramatic responses in hematological malignancies, mostly B cells, lymphomas and leukemias. There is still work to be done to get these CAR T cells to work in solid tumors. But again, those are FDA approved and certainly has been very efficacious in these B cell lymphomas. And it's another form of immunotherapy that I think people think of when they say immunotherapy. But there are other types too that have not yet been approved, but are certainly under investigation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a super exciting area that I think has so much promise. So, you know, you mentioned that there was a time when no one thought that your body's immune system could help you fight cancer. And obviously, the Cancer Research Institute has been involved in this space for so long, even when you guys were the only ones that were doing this. So can you tell us a little bit about the Cancer Research Institute and your mission and how and why you became focused exclusively on cancer immunotherapy?
Yeah, so I think you set it up right. We were founded back in 1953. So this was way before, you know, the immunotherapies that we have today. And as you said, I think we were a lone voice in the wilderness, I would say, for many, many years. And the history is, it's just an interesting history. That our organization was started by a woman, Helen Coley Knotts, whose father was William B. Coley, who was a surgeon in the 1890s in New York, actually at what is now Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital. It wasn't called that then. And of course, in that time, the only treatment for cancer was really surgery. There were no chemotherapies yet. Radiation hadn't been discovered yet. And he got very upset about losing patients to cancer. And one in particular was a young woman called Bessie DeShall. She was only, I think, 16 or 17 years old. She came to him thinking that she had gotten her arm caught in a railway car. I think back in those days, the cars used to switch back and forth, somehow got a cord. Ended up, she had a sarcoma. They amputated her arm, but she still died. And Coley was really upset by this and started looking back in the history and the documents in the hospital and saw that occasionally patients with cancer went into spontaneous remission when they developed an acute bacterial infection. He didn't understand why, but he thought, well, there's a connection here. So he created what came to be known as Coley's toxins, which was originally a mixture of live bacteria. And remember, this is pre-antibiotics. So this is something that could not be done today, but he made this mixture, the toxins from these bacteria, and injected them into a patient that had a sarcoma on the neck. And amazingly, the sarcoma became necrotic and disappeared. And the patient ended up living a very full life. So he believed that he didn't understand what was happening. Over the next few years, there became killed bacteria, but he treated thousands of patients with this, and not just him. It was used at the Mayo Clinic. It was used in England. And remarkably had some, when you look back on these records now, probably a 10% or a 15% response rate, which really is not so bad considering this, but never really understood what was happening. And many times the mixtures that were made in the lab, there was no standardization. So some were more potent than others. So you had a variability. And then radiation was discovered. And radiation became the treatment du jour for cancer. And Coley's toxins was left in the wayside, I'd said, and almost discredited. And he died, I think, with a black cloud over his reputation. And Helen, his daughter, decided to write his biography. And she's the one that found all these patient records, went on to track how the patients, how long they lived and died, wrote 13 scholarly monographs after she decided to found the Cancer Research Institute. And she really started it to get the medical community re-engaged into what was happening with Coley's toxins. And so the first 10 to 15 years of CRI, that's what the work was funding people that were working on Coley's toxins and trying to understand how it worked. And then in about the late 60s is when Dr. Lloyd Old, who many now think of as the father of modern cancer immunotherapy, while Coley is considered the father of cancer immunotherapy, came from Berkeley to Memorial Sloan Kettering and was funded by the Cancer Research Institute and subsequently became the head of our Scientific Advisory Council. And he was very interested in inflammation and cancer. And he was one of the discoverers of tumor necrosis factor, which now was a way to kind of link the phenomena of Coley with the immune system, because tumor necrosis factor is a factor that's produced by cells of the immune system in response to lipopolysaccharide, which is in the cell walls of bacteria. So here now is this link of bacteria probably actually activated the immune system as the immune system was trying to get rid of the bacteria. But because it was injected into the tumor site, all of this, the immune cells rushed to the tumor and killed the tumor. So Lloyd was the one that basically told Helen, you know, it was time to get away from the phenomenology and let's understand what this link is with the immune system. And this is really in the nascent days of immunology. So we took a very long road that we believed from that point that there was a role that the immune system could play in a therapy for cancer. But first, we had to understand better how the immune system worked. So we started a postdoctoral fellowship program back in 1971 that was funding both basically basic immunology and not much cancer. But as the years have gone, we've been very science-driven. always driven by scientific excellence and not moving into cancer immunology until enough was learned about the immune system first to make it seem intelligently be able to used. And we didn't really move into clinical work until there was a, you know, basic mechanistic understanding. And now we have programs that span the entire continuum of research, from very basic laboratory work to translational research to clinical trials.
It's just such a fascinating history. It really is.
I know. I keep thinking there should be a movie about this.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Something to do next. So, you know, here we are talking about cancer immunotherapy on a focused ultrasound podcast. So when did you first hear about focused ultrasound and what was your impression?
So I think the first time I heard of focused ultrasound is that I met you at a conference. I don't know how many years ago. That's got to be, I don't know.
Close to 10 years.
Right. And I really had never heard of focused ultrasound before, I'll be quite honest, you know. And so over the years, we, of course, have collaborated with the Cancer Research Institute and Focused Ultrasound Foundation, and I've learned a lot. And as complicated as the immune system is, I think focused ultrasound is just as complicated, because though I have sat through many workshops with you and meetings with you and listened to people, there's so many different types that deliver different things. And so, you know, it's almost the same thing with the immune system. It's almost too much. You know, what do you do? You know, like, it's so many things to choose from. How can you test everything together? And there's so many combinations you can put together. But I think the big thing about focused ultrasound is that it certainly has proven to be safe. It's safe, and it seems to be so focused. You know, I mean, that seems a little bit like, yes, it's focused ultrasound, but like, can deliver to such a, in a precise way, the treatment that can lead to disruption of cells. It can lead to cell killing, you know, it can, you know, and I think it has the potential, especially because of the safety profile, to be able to be combined with immunotherapies. Because I think that's always one of the things we have to worry about when we start doing combination therapies. Adverse events, of course, increase the more drugs or the more things you put together. So very important, I think, when you have something that has such a good safety profile, that it makes it a very good partner for combining with other things.
Can you describe CRI's partnership with the Focused Ultrasound Foundation? And kind of maybe moving forward, if you think about a real potential for the combination, where that might be.
Yeah, so I think we started when we didn't know as much about even about immunotherapy at the time when we were starting. It was just kind of coming out. Checkpoints were just coming out. And I think we have worked together by co-funding things together. I've been very happy to kind of serve on an advisory position to the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. And we've put together these workshops of bringing immunologists together with people in Focused Ultrasound. And I think your foundation has done a great job of bringing experts together and asking the question, putting those burning questions that you always put together just as a way to kind of guide where your funding should go. And I think I remember when we first started, and even Neil, who is he chairman, founder? He was very interested in, like, I think right away we had clinical trials going on and he wanted us to put focused ultrasound into our clinical trials. And I think, you know, I kind of had to temper his enthusiasm a little, I'd say. I think we needed to learn. As much as you were doing so much on what you could see what focused ultrasound was doing for certain diseases and disrupting cancer, we didn't really know what focused ultrasound was actually doing to the immune system. And I think you've funded a lot of work trying to figure that out in mouse models. And of course, I think you have to move that into patients, because we all know, as good as any mouse model is, it doesn't always translate exactly into the human situation. And I think one of the opportunities, which I've always been sad about, is that in the focused ultrasound field, you have a lot of different instrumentations out there, a lot of different companies that have a lot of, and they're testing it and using it, and especially in cancer trials, I would say. And unfortunately, not being able to get the patient samples from those, that's a big loss, I think, because I think that's where we can learn the most. And I think you've started funding some academic trials that, especially at the University of Virginia, that is doing just that, that it's not just looking at blood samples, but also taking biopsy samples and really analyzing them away to really do translational research on those and to really figure out what exactly, even before you combine it with immunotherapy, well, what is it really doing? And I think we always talk about there's various ways focused ultrasound could be used in treating cancer. And one, from an immunological perspective, we know, as I said, taking the brakes off the immune system, checkpoints, I said, you have to have an immune response happening already that is getting shut down by the tumor, and by giving checkpoints, you release it. But in one of the reasons that some patients don't respond to checkpoints is they don't mount an immune response. And I think this is, you know, these cold tumors versus hot tumors. And we know that one of the ways to generate an immune response is using vaccines. And that's one of the things that are combining. And that's an area of also excitement. mRNA vaccines are coming back. Vaccines are kind of coming back on the scene. But focused ultrasound also could almost serve as an in situ vaccination, because you're killing the cancer cells, and once whatever you kill, you're releasing some antigens, and it probably also causes inflammation. You know, that damage that's happening there attracts the immune system there, and the immune system can take up these antigens and start mounting immune response. So that's certainly one of the ways I could see, and then you could combine that with checkpoints. There's also in, you know, some of the hard to treat cancers, something like pancreatic cancer, that we know it's when the tumor itself is not just made up of tumor cells, but it's made up of normal cells that are called kind of the stroma. And it's a very dense stroma, which is actually a barrier for getting these killer T cells to actually get into the tumor bed and do what they need to do. So again, I think this is focused ultrasound, I think, has been shown you can disrupt stroma. And that is another reason to actually help in getting another step of that immune cycle I talked about, is even when you have activated T cells, they still have to migrate to the tumor bed and get in there. And in a case like pancreatic, there's that natural barrier of stroma. So focused ultrasound could disrupt that and actually get the tumors, you know, the T cells in there to do their job. I think we also talked about, I think, ways, and you know this more than I do, the things that focused ultrasound can do, but the blood-brain barrier for brain cancers, you know, getting drugs in there. Immunotherapies, T cells seem to be able to get into the brain. So, you know, it may not be the same as putting a chemotherapy, but that's certainly a way that focused ultrasound could combine. So there's lots of areas, and there's lots of the different types of focused ultrasound. What do they actually do, and what is best to combine with what in what cancer type? These are still the burning questions that I don't think we've totally answered yet.
Right. Yeah. There's still a lot of research needed to really truly understand the immune response that's created by focused ultrasound. But I just wanted to add from the foundation's perspective, the partnership with CRI has been completely critical to, you know, in our mind, to the evolution of this field. And when we first started partnering, you know, we had that first workshop. We brought a few focused ultrasound people there. You brought some immunology folks there, and you know, no, we had very little of the immunological data that was needed in the early studies. And so kind of infusing the immunology into our field was something that really needed to happen. There were collaborations formed at that very first workshop and ever since between, immunologists and focused ultrasound experts that I think have just been so fruitful. And for us, it was really, you know, again, your involvement in bringing the real immunology expertise into the field was also validating for focused ultrasound, you know, to say, hey, this is an area to consider. And if we all work together, we can move the needle here. And so, you know, just to let you know that this partnership has been completely instrumental for us. I don't think this field would have gone nearly as far as it has without.
Wonderful to hear. And I do think, you know, we right now at CRI, we do have a pancreatic platform study going on. And I think it's something, as basically you've already, the FDA has allowed focused ultrasound to be used in treating, I think, breast cancer patients, and maybe, I don't know if in pancreatic yet or not, but
well, and liver tumors
for sure. Yes. Approved. So, you know, that helps now that it's a stage that it could be looked at as a potential partner in our platform study. And for those that don't understand platform studies, we have it's a general, IND that covers first line metastatic pancreatic cancer. And when you have a platform study, you can put small groups, little cohorts. We do only like 10 or 15 patient cohorts of combination treatments with deep immunological correlatives. And it's an iterative process. If in that 10 or 15 patients, you get you define it ahead of time, a significant number of clinical responses, you can expand and put 10 more patients on. But if it looks like nothing is happening there, you can close that cohort down, but the trial stays open. So it's a much more efficient way of doing trials, and because you can just add another, and each arm should kind of inform the next type thing. So, you know, we have an ongoing study, and I think we have the way we do this is we have a drug selection committee made up of clinicians that are experts in pancreatic cancer, but are also experts in immunology. And we ask them to come with, it's kind of bring your own combination, BYOB, bring your BYOC, bring your own combination to this meeting where they present a rationale of why this new combination should be considered for the platform. And I think we're getting to the stage that we really should talk about could focus ultrasound, you know, have focus ultrasound people that have used it already and come and just inform our drug selection committee about what is known already and see if ideas can come up about how they could be potentially combined.
And I believe that most, if not all, of the kind of major approvals, FDA approvals of, you know, really important, significant cancer immunotherapies is somehow you've been involved in that process, yeah. Right?
You can kind of trace that. You can kind of trace it back. I mean, it's funny because, you know, a drug gets approved, you know, an immunotherapy, it's made by a pharmaceutical company. And, you know, that's the name it goes by. But when you look back of how did it get there? And you really can trace it all the way back to very seminal things. And our, I really think CRI has had our hand on all of the major discoveries in the field.
Wonderful. Yeah. So this has been just a wonderful conversation. Just to let our listeners know how they can keep up with you and the work at CRI, you know, as they want to follow what's going on in this field.
Yeah, so I think the best is probably our website. You know, cancerresearch.org is the website. And you can get on there and you can sign up to get our newsletters, we put out a monthly ImmuNews, which is an emailed newsletter of what's going on. So it's probably the best place, you know, to, and of course, you know, you can learn how to give us money too.
Yeah,
to contribute
course.
To us.
Of course. Well, thank you so much, Jill. This was wonderful.
Well, thanks, Jessica. It was great.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about Focused Ultrasound or the Foundation, visit our website at fusfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.